when a lot of companies try to hire someone new, they're not just looking for candidates with these skills and experience to do the job. They're looking for someone who fits into the workplace culture.
In a recent op-ed in the New York Times, our guest says hiring for a good fit can make sense, but it's gone rogue in a number of workplaces, with some people getting the nod for trivial reasons and others not fitting in, sometimes whole groups like women, minority members, or people from different economic backgrounds.
Lauren Rivera joins us now. She's Associate Professor of Management and Organizations at Northwestern University's Kellogg School of Management and the author of the book Pedigree: How Elite Students Get Elite Jobs. Lauren, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, can you tell us what we're talking about when we talk about this idea of workplace fit or a cultural fit in the hiring process?
Definitely. I think that there are two ways in which we talk about it. The way that we most commonly talk about it when it's HR professionals or we talk about it in an aspirational sense is the idea that we're searching for new hires who fit with the culture of our organization, that the culture is a way that we motivate people, and we want people who are similar to that culture that can help enable business goals. But the second, and unfortunately one of the more common ways that fit actually gets translated in practice, is this job candidate similar to me? So interviewers oftentimes define the fit with the organization as a fit with themselves, and that can result in some maladaptive outcomes. The type of fit I talked about at first, the fit with the culture of the organization, can actually be a really good thing. But when we measure it by fit with the self, it can definitely result in suboptimal hiring decisions, but also discriminatory ones.
So this idea, the bad way of doing this, kind of the personal fit, how common is that? How widely used, intentionally or not, is that?
It is very, very common. I think that it's a very natural process. It's a very human process that we want to gravitate towards people who are like ourselves, and we want to be surrounded with people who are like ourselves. I think that the organizations that actually measure culture fit really well, as opposed to interviewer fit, go out of their way to make sure that the interview and the hiring process is structured. And so the questions that are asked, the tests that are given, really are about measuring organizational goals and fit with organizational values, as opposed to leaving interviews up to the discretion of interviewers who might ask you what your favorite movie is, what you like to do in your spare time, if you could have dinner with five people on the planet, who they would be, those sorts of questions. So I think that it's actually the selection on personal fit is unfortunately more common than we would like.
Yeah, you're right that it's an idea that's, you use the phrase, gone rogue in a lot of workplaces. How out of hand is this?
I think that it varies from workplace to workplace. Again, some workplaces, they actually do a really, really good job about it. And I highlight two of them in the article that I wrote in the New York Times, which are Southwest Airlines and Bridgewater Associates. However, I think that in organizations where it has gone rogue, it's become an excuse to hire people who you want to hang out with and to not hire people who are different from you. When I talk to my MBA students, one of the most my favorite questions to ask them is, how do you personally hire? What's most important to you? And a lot of them say skill-based aspects such as, you know, ability to interact with clients, do the job well, but by far the most common thing they say is this is this a person I want to have a beer with? And those types of judgments, I think, can get us into a lot of trouble.
Well, one extreme you bring up, you had a case where a Red Sox fan was making the case that a Yankees fan wasn't going to be a good fit at the workplace.
Right, right. And that type of behavior, I'm not saying, is the most common behavior.
I hope not.
But these judgments that we make as to, is this a person I just want to be around? I think that there's some element of that that's important in terms of establishing collegiality, establishing likability, but it can go too far when you're excluding people based off of their sports team's affiliations, what movies they like, what they like to do in their spare time, and so forth. And it can also serve as a mask for different types of discrimination, such as age discrimination is one that's been a very hot topic in Silicon Valley in terms of this idea of fit.
Talking to Professor Lauren Rivera about workplace culture and how it affects hiring at the workplace and the issue she just brought up, diversity. And let's get into that. I mean, we brought up some things that might sound trivial at first. That I mentioned the Yankees fan maybe not getting that job. But you say this ultimately can exclude whole groups of people, maybe women. You mentioned based on age, maybe minority groups. This looking for a personal fit might leave a lot of people out in the cold.
Yes, it definitely can. And sometimes it can be intentional, but a lot of times it's just who people click with and have a sense of chemistry with. and you're more likely to have that sense of chemistry with someone who's similar to you. The problem with this idea of fit is that it can serve as a justification for taking those feelings of discomfort based off of difference and kind of package them in an HR-approved way of excluding a candidate. So this can definitely affect women in many organizations, not just the types I study, which are Wall Street banks, law firms, consulting firms, but research has shown that it's a similar trend in a lot of corporations, ranging from high tech to fashion. What's defined as a fit in many organizations is stereotypically masculine. So this can adversely affect candidates who are more stereotypically feminine, regardless of if they are actually male or female. Age discrimination is a huge one, especially in Silicon Valley, and racial discrimination and ethnic discrimination, even religious discrimination, can actually be at play here.
And you mentioned the banks and other corporations that you study. You've written elsewhere about how this could lead to places that have elite upper-class employees now replicating that again and again in the future.
Definitely. So one of the ways that fit is judged in the corporations I study are through extracurricular activities among MBA students, law students, and undergraduates. And the types of extracurricular activities that were taken as evidence of fit were not only adrenaline-inducing, stereotypically masculine activities, but they were also those most associated with upper-class and upper-middle-class culture. And this is one of the reasons why those types of industries tend to be filled, and those organizations tend to be filled with individuals from some of the highest socioeconomic backgrounds in the country.
So you were in the Scotch Tasting Club and the Yachting Club, too, and that kind of thing might replicate an elite group.
Exactly. Or you were a varsity squash player, and mm-hmm. so was I. Or you were a varsity squash player, and I love to play squash. Let's talk about our game.
Well, let's talk about what's wrong with this, because it seems like on the face of it, okay, maybe some people are being excluded, but if you've got people who are talking the same language, they have a shared background, they can enjoy that beer or scotch or whatever together after work, might that not make for a better workplace?
So yes and no. So working with people who are collegial is important. Working with people who communicate well with clients and are liked by clients, also important. But the problem is that we naturally hire people who are similar to ourselves in the first place. We don't necessarily need an additional screen on whether or not we like to drink whiskey or beer, or even what type of microbrew we like within the beer category. We know from all the research that when decisions that are to be made in an organization are complex, they require creativity or innovation. Diverse teams and organizations outperform less diverse ones. And so we actually may not be getting the right people in the door. What you end up with people who really like each other and do want to go to have a drink together after work, but they may actually not be the best suited for the job.
So do you end up with maybe a kind of groupthink if you end up excluding this more diverse pool of candidates?
You definitely can. That's definitely one of the risks. And a lack of innovation is another risk. Another risk is that when groups are related to groupthink, is that when groups are overly homogenous, they are more likely to make unethical decisions.
Well, let's talk about how to do this right. And you mentioned the other kind of fit. Is this person a good cultural fit? Do they fit the values of this workplace? What's the right way to get at that, to measure that and then hire the right people?
It's a great question. So I think the first thing you have to do is have a very clear idea of what your organizational culture is and what your organizational values are. If you don't have a clear idea of that and you don't communicate that throughout your organization, especially to the people who are doing job interviews and who are responsible for hiring candidates, they don't have anything else to go on other than a fit with themselves. So I think that's number one. Number two is making sure that you provide people who are responsible for interviewing candidates and making hiring decisions with structured protocols that they can use, whether it's behavioral interviews, certain types of tests, and so forth, that actually probe this concept of fit systematically, such that you're giving someone concrete tools to measure, does this person fit with our organization as opposed to me personally? It's important when those techniques are being established that they focus on behaviors and values. What types of behaviors, what types of values are associated with thriving on the job? Ideally, that would be done through data-driven analysis rather than managers' personal theories of what constitutes a successful employee. But you need to have the focus on the behaviors and the values, because otherwise you would have a situation where people may be tempted to use heuristics, such as I only fit with X type of person, whether that be, you know, whiskey drinkers, lacrosse players, people who watch NASCAR, or people who are of a certain age, gender, or race. And the last thing is that we tend to overweigh interviews in making hiring decisions in many jobs. And interviews can provide a lot of valuable information about client skills, oral communication skills, but they're only one piece of the puzzle. So finding ways to temper our judgments made in interviews with other information about directly job-relevant skills can be really important.
A while back, we talked to Laszlo Bock. He does HR. They call it something different, but basically HR at Google. One of his rules in his new book is something to the effect of don't trust your gut. Is that kind of the core of what we're talking about here? If we give too much discretion to that gut instinct, that snap judgment by the person in the room with the candidate, we're asking for trouble?
Yeah, I think that our guts provide us with valuable information, but we have a culture, particularly in American business, that celebrates the gut. It's all everyone says, trust your gut. My best decisions were made by gut. And I think the what you were just talking about really calls attention to the downsides of that. A lot of information that we need to make decisions occurs through emotions, and those emotions are a necessary part of making a good decision. But we don't want them to count 100% of our decision, or even 80%. I think tempering your gut with other objective performance indicators derived through a resume, derived through behavioral interviewing, derived through some sort of systematic test or simulation of job-relevant capabilities is really important. Because if you do rely solely on your gut, you're going to get a workforce that is pretty homogenous and isn't necessarily equipped with the skill sets you need to perform optimally.
Before we let you go, Lauren, are you seeing the tide turning? Are businesses saying, hey, we've got this wrong idea of fit in our interviews, we need to change that?
I haven't yet. I hope that we will. I think it's something that some HR managers have been cognizant of for a year or so, or a couple of years. But I'm hoping that the tide does turn such that it becomes more of a systemic and more widely implemented practice to put more structure into this idea of fit so that it doesn't go rogue.
Lauren, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
That was Lauren Rivera, Associate Professor of Management and Organizations at Northwestern University's Kellogg School of Management, and the author of Pedigree, How Elite Students Get Elite Jobs.